I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. We begin the program today with Heather Mizier, the former Democratic primary gubernatorial candidate who has a new project called Ms. Maryland Soul Force Politics. It includes a podcast and empowerment workshops for women, among other things. In her podcast conversations with guests like Melissa Etheridge, Governor Larry Hogan, or filmmaker and actor Sonia Sohn, Heather Mizier makes the case that not only do we need to restore civility to public discourse, but that we need to look to spirituality as an important and often absent dimension of our political conversation. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with a review of The Lion King at the Hippodrome Theater. Midday gets underway right after these headlines. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're with us today for Midday. Next June, more than half a dozen candidates will be on the ballot in the race to become the standard bearer for the Democrats in the gubernatorial race against the popular Republican incumbent governor, Larry Hogan. My guest today was one of the primary candidates the last time around. Although her bid for the top job in Annapolis was unsuccessful, Heather Mizier emerged from the 2014 race as a thoughtful and charismatic voice of progressives. Speculation at that time was high that she would continue to be a force to be reckoned with in Maryland politics. Well, Heather Mizier has indeed remained a force, but it's no longer as a legislator or a candidate. Her force these days is what she refers to as Soul Force. She has started a multi-pronged organization called Ms. Maryland Soul Force Politics. It includes a podcast with prominent figures in the worlds of politics and entertainment, as well as workshops for women around empowerment. And Heather Mizier joins me here in Studio A to talk about it. Good to see you, Heather.
You too, Tom. It's always wonderful to be with you on the show.
So give us the mechanics of this thing. I mean, the Ms. Maryland Soul Force Politics is this whole entity, and when you go to your website, you see different parameters of it. Part of it is a podcast, then the workshops. Tell us a little bit about how this all works.
Sure thing. Thanks again for having us on the show to have this conversation. I like to first clarify, in our still baby phase of existence, only 6 or 7 weeks old now, what we aren't. We are not a religious organization. This isn't about anyone's particular tenets of faith or any religious dogma. It has nothing to do with religion. Spirituality is about a deep wisdom inside of all of us. And what we're trying to do at Soul Force Politics is recognize that if we bring our deepest spiritual guidance into our civic action, we will be much more effective at creating the change we want to see in our communities and also bridging the divide that exists in this us versus them mentality right now that has become particularly exacerbated since the 2015-2016 presidential election season. So this is an offering to those who are interested in putting their best self forward into their communities, into their relationships, into their conversations with people. And we do have multi-pronged offerings. One is a blog that includes everything from policy prescriptions on, I have on there an idea on how we could create a state-based community service program, not unsimilar to the National AmeriCorps program, that could be tied in with the national efforts and be connected to the conversations that may be happening about tuition-free benefits at community colleges. I go on to discuss a policy issue that I advocated as governor about legalizing, taxing, and regulating marijuana. At the time, the Baltimore Sun refused to endorse me in the governor's race, in part because they said they thought I was pushing that policy too soon, and why don't we have a wait-and-see approach about how this works in Washington State and Colorado? Well, okay, let's take a look at the numbers.
Yeah, you've answered them.
We've had a few years now. So in this essay, we lay out why this still makes sense. But you can also find Heather's 5 Fresh Farm egg recipes on there and a little bit of a story about what life is like on the farm with our flock of chickens. And the podcast, I think, is very much a signature piece of what we're offering. Because in these times, it feels like we've forgotten how to have conversations. we're so distracted and used to social media engagements that are quick and sometimes flippant or snarky. And we're very polarized as a nation right now, and it tends to be lobbying things about your ideas or beliefs from one side or the other, and only finding solace into connecting with people who agree with you. And instead, can we explore the lost art form of actually having a conversation, having a dialogue, and finding common ground where we may disagree? That was part of the conversation with Governor Hogan. It'll be part of the conversation that I will be having soon with Congressman Andy Harris from the Eastern Shore in Baltimore County. And for those who I might agree with, like a Chris Van Hollen or a Barbara Mikulski or a Melissa Etheridge, it gives us an opportunity, this platform of the podcast gives us an opportunity to explore a whole range of things, from the person's own gift and talent and what they're offering in the world, to having some opportunity to have insights into who they are and how they think and how they interact in the world that fits with this theme. Ultimately, when we grow up, when Soul Force Politics really arrives, I want to have a training camp on my farm that brings people in for retreats and a deeper dive into some of the elements of honorable leadership, successful civic engagement, nonviolent resistance, the core principles on how we can engage in the world to make a difference and be passionate about what we care about, but also find an opportunity to engage in conversation with someone who might disagree with you, and really being able to hold their own humanity in a way that allows you to see the connection rather than what the difference is.
To join our conversation this afternoon with Heather Mazier, 410-662-8780 is the number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. One of the things, Heather, I think that makes that conversation so difficult to have is the fact that the bifurcation and people's passion on both sides of the political spectrum now, many people attribute their position to their spiritual understanding of the world. The people on the right, the people who Mr. Trump is appealing to, for example, on the national level, appear more than willing to overlook all sorts of things that they may not personally endorse or understand about Mr. Trump, but because of, you know, his position on judges for the Supreme Court, or his positions on right to life, or his positions on one or two immigration, one or two other things, they're just simply not willing to entertain any other point of view. I mean, how does a person become politically engaged in a time that the bifurcation is so stark?
Mm-hmm. It is challenging. There's no question. Many of those examples you gave, though, I still see as a religious distinction. And really, to take some of the let's take spirituality off the table for a minute and replace it with words like kindness, unconditional love, compassion. That's what I'm talking about. This inner wisdom that flows inside of us, in our heart space.
But the people on the other side of the politics, of the political spectrum, also feel it in their heart space, do they not?
Well,
and whether you call it spirituality,
I'm not saying that their position on those issues might not be heart-based positions. But I'm talking about the distinction of what I'm offering here. I find that anytime we are in a space where we can first strip away the barriers, the labels, the boundaries that we put up against each other, and just try to find a common space to have a dialogue. Let's use the right to life issue that you're alluding to as an example. Ultimately, there may be more that binds us on this concept than we would expect. When I was in the legislature, I had an opportunity to sit down with a very vocal, right-wing, conservative, pro-life member of the General Assembly and have a conversation with him about how there is an illusion that we are on opposite sides of this issue. The only place we disagree is what happens once an unwanted pregnancy comes forward and whether or not there are going to be choices allowed in that process. But before that, none of us are looking to say, hey, let's encourage everyone to have abortions. Is there an opportunity for us to eliminate unwanted pregnancies before they even happen? So family planning has become this code word that usually puts liberals and conservatives, Republicans and Democrats on opposite corners saying this is a pro-life, pro-choice thing. It doesn't have to be. When we empower women to have babies when it makes sense to them, we also can lower the abortion rate, and women tend to engage in the healthcare system earlier, and so the health outcomes for their babies improve and infant mortality rates go down. And so, armed with some data from the Alan Guttmacher Institute that showed that we could lower the abortions in Maryland by 3,000 a year by extending family planning coverage to more low-income women through our Medicaid program, it could be a win-win for all of us. And ultimately, that member of the House of Delegates, Mike Smeagol, who at the time represented parts of the Eastern Shore, he and I partnered on pushing that legislation through the House, and then Senator Catherine Pugh was involved in helping us move it through the Senate, and it became law. The Family Planning Expansion Act became law in part because we removed this illusion that this had to be a policy that we had to fight on. And it first started with a very important conversation of just creating some commonality and some trust and a willingness to explore something that otherwise we would maybe think we had nothing in common to discuss.
And of course, you know, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of having a conversation about just this one thing, but there are people who, again, their spiritual grounding tells them that even family planning it runs contrary to their theological, religious, spiritual beliefs. You know, so the contraception is on the same par as an abortion. So it is a difficult conversation to have with people at different times. And the other way I think that the bifurcation manifests itself, I'll give you the example of Governor Hogan. We chatted about this briefly the last time you were here on the news wrap. The governor won't appear on this program. He just won't. He won't do it. And my first request to him came in September of 2015, and I have been regularly in touch with his staff over these last 2 years. But people are picking their corners, you know. Mm-hmm. So he does appear on programs that he evidently appears to think are, you know, more conservative in their orientation than my program. But I tell our listeners all the time that if you are a supporter of Mr. Trump, for example, if you're a supporter of the Republican platform, if you're a supporter on the political right, you are welcome at this table. We want to hear from mm-hmm. them. We actually have a very difficult time finding people who are willing to defend President Trump in particular. But here's a really popular governor who's very politically astute, obviously. He's a very popular guy in an overwhelmingly Democratic state. And he won't even have the conversation. And that's very frustrating to mm-hmm. me. And Governor, if you and your staff are listening, the door is open. We'd love to have you. So even bringing people to the table these days gets complicated. There are, you know, just this week, Mr. Schumer and Ms. Pelosi decided that the president was doing too much grandstanding before a scheduled meeting they had. And they just said, all right, we're not even going. We're not going to have that conversation. I wonder, does the spiritual dimension of what you're talking about, the soul force mm-hmm. of the politics that you're putting in literally the title of the uh-huh. of the organization, is that the thing that's going to move the needle that way? I mean, is that the thing that's going to say to people, look, there are things that are more important than, you know, temporary political calculations. We should have a wide-ranging conversation with as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's also step back and talk a little bit about where soul force is grounded. This isn't a term I made up, although I did kind of come up with putting it together with the word politics, soul force politics. But soul force was something that Gandhi talked about in his work. Satyagraha is roughly translated into soul force, your soul's force for good in the world. In Martin Luther King's speech His famous I Have a Dream speech, he talked about the importance of putting our soul's force into how we engage in the world. There are so many masters before us. Harriet Tubman, Nelson Mandela, they all have put in very beautiful work that they were doing a very strong dose of their soul's force for goodness in the world. And what I'm offering in this project is the notion that our political discourse desperately needs our soul's force for goodness, clarity, wisdom, connection in the world. Again, not about religions, not about what your tenets of faith are, not about what your value system is, just that connection to our goodness, our kindness, our willingness to engage with each other in an honorable way. It's sad that we have to have this kind of back to the fundamentals, but we've become so polarized and so separated from each other that it's just a time for remembering. And so much of life's journey, Tom, is really about coming back to a place of remembering. When we were kids, we knew how to get along and see the magic of the world and connect in really beautiful ways. We had to learn to be other than that. And along the way, we got guidance from parents and teachers and friends to how to be reminded to be kind and whatnot. But so much of our life's journey really is about remembering that goodness that is already inside of us and that natural tendency to be connected to each other, to give the benefit of the doubt, to be open to the curiosity of what it means to engage in dialogue with someone where you're willing to learn from them. Not because you have to defend your position. No one is saying, I am not saying, change your mind, change your values, try to create an opportunity for someone to, you know, come to your side of viewing the world the same way. But we don't listen to each other anymore. When we get into these conversations, we tend to just be armed with our talking points and we're not really listening and we're ready to just try to jam out there what it is that we think and believe as a way to force that position on the other person, and they're doing it back to us, and then we're not connecting to each other. But can you be curious? Tell me, why do you think that way? Help me understand what your life experience has been that brings you to that place. And when we're curious and open-hearted, it opens doors, and it creates an opportunity for beauty and magic to happen, and we've lost that. And that's what I want to bring back, Tom.
Well, more power to you, kiddo. Let me tell you, it sounds terrific. I got my fingers crossed. I'll tell you, we're going to take a little bit of a break. Heather Mazier is the founder of Ms. Maryland Soul Force Politics. We'll have more with Heather Mazier when we come back from that little break. 410-662-8780. If you want to weigh in, email is midday@wypr.org. Find us on Twitter @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. Reporter Baynard Woods of the Baltimore Beat and the Real News Network will join me, along with Darlene Superville. She's a White House reporter for the Associated Press. Plus, we're going to talk about Charles Dickens with some folks who are about to launch a weekend of Dickens-related activities in Chestertown. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. And later in today's program, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will be here with a review of The Lion King at the Hippodrome Theater. But first, back to our conversation with Heather Mazier, the founder of Ms. Maryland Soul Force Politics, in which she explores the intersection of what she calls inner wisdom and external actions and how it can animate political movements. We welcome your thoughts, your questions, your comments. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and to find us on Twitter @MiddayTomHall. We do have an email, Heather, and you can imagine that, you know, people are interested in your political views, you know, given the splash you made 4 years ago. This is Paul, who says, since you ran such a good campaign for governor 4 years ago, who do you support for governor in this year's race?
I am not formally backing anyone. I actually, as an individual voter, haven't even made up my mind yet. It's still really early in the process. I think it's great that there are so many candidates that have declared. I've always said that that primaries are good for democracy, and we should have as many candidates in the fields testing their ideas and creating buckets of support as possible in communities all across the state. I'm looking forward to seeing how some of the forums and the debates play out and watching how the tickets get formulated and what each candidate's offering. I think there are lots of really great choices. And
do you anticipate at some point in the process that you will make an endorsement?
I haven't made up my mind about that yet. I'm newly in this role of leading a nonprofit organization that specifically is showing that we are nonpartisan in our approach. And I kind of need to work out the mechanics of how much does Heather Mazier getting engaged in one campaign or not bleed over, because at this stage I'm so much a part of what this organization is about, and I just haven't decided if I'm going to be publicly endorsing yet or not.
All right, let's go to the phones. John in Union Bridge, welcome to Midday with Heather Mazier.
Yeah, thank you. I hear often of this, nonpartisanship is really a good thing in this day and age, and so is we hear in quotes, kindness. We ought to be kind to each other. And I think those are two very important principles of discussion and debate and community. However, I think we do create a cloud with those things. People who have been treated unkindly by the society or life or whatever, and people who, like the West Virginia miners, who have... who have really suffered and under the problems with coal and so on. And so we say, well, be kind when you talk, but, they're not used to talking. And so they have to evolve with all of us. And I think sometimes we put people off because we seem like we're asking for inordinate politeness. And I think that is a mistake, and it's kind of proven with how our politics have gone and who supports who who has supported who for president. And I think that we need to really reexamine that wall that we put up about kindness and look at how we're also walling off people who would come into seeing and talking with everybody in one forum.
So, all right, well,
thank you very much.
Thanks for that comment, John. I appreciate it. Inordinate politeness. That's interesting. Yeah.
In the example John gave, I would encourage someone not to just pretend to be kind or offer kindness up just as a way to try to connect.
As a political strategy.
I'm talking about in that moment, to me, a form of kindness, and connecting to the example of a coal miner is not to presume, one, that you're more educated or that you have some deeper, better knowledge of how the world works. As I mentioned earlier, go into it with curiosity and really learn about what that person's experience is and connect with them about their economic challenges. And then find an opportunity to learn whether or not have there also been ways that this kind of mountaintop removal has created harm for your community? How is there a way to have some agreement that while this was a lifeline for you for a job in an otherwise depressed economy, have there been ways that this hasn't served you too? And can we find some connection to each other about recognizing that you and your dignity deserves a job, but that maybe we can agree that let's find a better job for you and one that doesn't harm the environment and one that recognizes that we need to honor our land and not be blowing off the tops of the mountains in order to create that job.
So there is a dimension of persuasion in this. I mean, I've been talking to people now for, a while. I had Van Jones on the program. He wrote a book which basically takes very much the position you're advocating, that sure, we may not agree on everything, but let's find the things that we do agree on, things like over-incarceration. There's a bill co-sponsored by the likes of Rand Paul and Cory Booker. I mean, how much else do they agree on? Well, they agree on incarceration or opioid addiction. So maybe mm-hmm. people don't agree on immigration, or maybe people don't agree on tax reform or the budget priorities, but they find the things you can agree on and do it. Others, Joy Reid and I had a conversation about this, and she basically takes a position. It's senseless to try to persuade these people who are the so-called Trump base. Let's not try to, show them the light or win them over to our argument. Let's just overwhelm them with better participation in the electoral process. Let's not stay home the way we stayed mm-hmm. home in 2016 that allowed Mr. Trump to win. So there isn't even an argument within the political left, at least, about whether or not it's worth the effort to even have a conversation that says, well, maybe you should think about this mountaintop removal in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Well, my response to let's just overwhelm them and win elections is, okay, yes, the Democrat in me that wants to see my approach and my vision and the values that I hold win elections and keep on allowing progress to move forward in these things that I care about instead of what we've been seeing as a doubling back, going backwards. Sure. However, again, step back, though, and think about where the value points are in what's going on right now. Racism has existed in our nation forever. And yet it's always been kind of underground in this thing that we're not supposed to talk about. And I'm actually seeing the presence of this administration creating some sort of permission for white nationalists and racists to come out of the woodwork as an opportunity for healing and trying to create a different approach. Otherwise, when these things are underground, they fester and they get uglier. You bring anything from the ground into the light, and there is an opportunity for a shift. And so why can we not also simultaneously look for opportunities to create a shift? These things do happen. I listened to an amazing TED Talk the other day from the granddaughter of Fred Phelps, who was raised in this church family whose approach to everything was picketing the funeral of military service members who had been gay and just had sort of a very hateful approach in the name of God and their religion to how she interacted in the world. And it was through engagement, of all places, social media and Twitter, where people started
not
talking to her.
Not known as the kindest forum in the
yes,
world.
Yeah. But people started engaging with her that over time helped her completely shift her perspective in the world. And she left the church and that approach and has a whole different way of viewing the world that she credits people engaging her in a dialogue in a non-judgmental way that helped her open up a conversation into a different heart space. There, we have to believe in our power, Tom, to manifest change. I'm always struck at how people
throwing in the towel certainly doesn't
people,
work.
Yeah. It's become a default to be more comfortable. We don't fear our inadequacies; we fear our power. And encouraging people to step into their power and know that you can have a conversation with someone that can create a remarkable outcome. And it might not be the outcome you think it is. You might go into it with this idea of persuasion and thinking that you're going to change the other person. Maybe you can also be open to them changing you as well. Maybe not on your fundamental core values or the way you're viewing an issue, but there's always an opportunity in these connections that are really profound if we allow them to happen and if we're not too scared to step into our power to watch that unfold.
Speaking of fear of our power, you were giving workshops as part of this project, Soul Force Politics, specifically around issues of women's empowerment. Mm-hmm. It strikes me that this is an amazing moment for women's mm-hmm. empowerment, given
yes.
this tsunami of allegations and accusations and admissions mm-hmm. of sexual harassment that go back decades. Mm-hmm. They are affecting people large and small in the public imagination. They are affecting celebrities. They are affecting any number of people. I mean, with all the movie stars that we hear about and the people in media that we hear about, Lord knows how many hotel maids and how many fast food workers and how many people we don't hear about have suffered exactly the same thing mm-hmm. at the hands of exactly the same kind of lecherous superiors. But that conversation is certainly happening because of the Matt Lauers and the Garrison Keillors and the, you know, Charlie Roses of the world. When you do these workshops for women mm-hmm. In this moment, mm-hmm. What are the elements of empowering women in this day and age through the prism of soul force politics? Mm-hmm.
Thank you for asking. The initial offerings of Ms. Maryland was to do 10 workshops across the state focused on women's empowerment, though I often like to also highlight that we are not just a women's organization and we will be offering future trainings that are above and beyond just a women's focus. But in this time and space, it did feel important to start there. The workshops, I used the Wonder Woman movie as a teaching tool because I found in that movie, you know, there were so many women who saw that movie and were on the edge of their seats and they were like, oh my gosh, like you ran out of the theater ready to stop traffic with your wristbands, you know, like you were just so on fire.
Don't try this at home, kids. Yeah.
And it was like, well, what was that about that movie that was touching everyone so deeply? And it's this archetype of the warrior woman. And when there are these subconscious archetypes that we can tap into sometimes, and watching a movie is a great place for that because you're giving over your consciousness to this film that you're watching. And when you're sitting there feeling like, I am Diana of Themyscira, you're tapping into this archetype of the warrior woman. And we use her sword and her shield as symbols of this work that we can do to step into our empowerment that is both internal work, the work we do behind the shield, and our external work, the work we do when we enter out into the world and are the woman wielding the sword. And they're really many of the same issues, just from an internal perspective versus an external perspective, but then bringing them all together. How do we go into a place of deeper self-love and stop criticizing ourselves before we even walk out the door about how our jeans feel too tight or we're having an awful hair day or our skin complexion doesn't look the way we want it to. That using examples of how I have a friend that was a headhunter at a major corporation that often was trying to get women to apply for jobs, and she would get their interest on the phone and then they'd never follow up. And when she would inquire why, she'd say, well, you sent me over the qualifications and I only had 7 of the 10. And Anne would say, I have an entire stack of resumes from men who have 4 of the qualifications. You know, what is it about it culturally where men feel okay to say, you know what, I've only got 4, but I'm going to go for it anyway because I'll learn the other 6 and they're going to be so impressed with me. But women are self-sabotaging and needing to feel like they have to do it perfectly in order to step into that power. And so we go into a whole range of issues, including how we all have our own lasso of truth. It's that beating heart. Lasso of truth. If you have not seen this movie, Tom, you need to see it.
This is all in the Wonder Woman movie?
Of course.
I have not seen this movie.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's time. All right? You can get it on iTunes. You can rent it for like, you can own it even for like $14. Do you have granddaughters?
I have a pathetic life.
That's
I never
okay.
get out to the movies.
It's okay. Era. It's okay. I understand. I often don't as well.
But clearly, this is a favorite movie.
Oh, very much so. And of so many women. The enthusiasm of the women who came to these workshops was really great. Some of whom were enthusiastic about the movie. Others were interested in having this dialogue with someone who had run for governor and has had an opportunity to live fairly empowered life. Others, a desire to connect with other women who were looking to find their voice in this special time and place, which you mentioned. There's this desire to get more active. If the ascendancy of Donald Trump into the presidency has done anything, it is to awaken many people from getting off the sidelines and engaging and understanding that they have to be involved in making sure that our communities and our nation interacts in the world in the way we want it to, and not defer that power to an elected official, that it's time for us to be engaged. But some people were like, I've never done this before. How do I be engaged in the world? And so,
and tens of thousands of candidates, particularly many women, are now entering politics. I mean, the primaries for the 2018 congressional races around the country on the left, on the Democratic side, mm-hmm. are going to be very full, not unlike our primary roster for governor here mm-hmm. In Maryland, which is coming up, you know, in June. I mean, there are eight declared candidates by my last count, and there may be more by the time we get to the actual voting booth. So, I mean, we had the Women's March the day after the inauguration. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think the energy from that march, which happened here in Washington as well as, you know, literally around the world, mm-hmm. Has sustained? I mean,
absolutely.
And in a way that will result in sort of cogent, you know, effective political movement?
We already saw that happen in the elections that occurred in 2017 mm-hmm. in Virginia and New Jersey and in municipal elections all across the country. People taking on entrenched incumbents, women taking on entrenched incumbents who made flippant remarks about women's march, you know, that they shouldn't be marching, they should be making dinner. And there was a woman that took on a candidate, elected official who had said that, beat him. You had Danica Rome, a transgender candidate in Virginia, that took on Bob Marshall, who was the most vocal anti-transgender legislator in the General Assembly. And she won because she was focused on local bread and butter issues of taking care of issues related to a local road concern in her community. And we're seeing women step up all over the place. I think with the Women's March.
Sorry, let me interrupt because we're just running out of time. So I want to ask you one quick question before we finish. The political calculation is often, you know, do you run to the left? Do you run to the right? I mean, you know, incumbents are going to be primaried on the right from further on the right. And, you know, and people, the political types talk about that. Do you have any words of wisdom for people running in this next cycle in 2018? I mean, is it to the left, to the right, to the middle?
None of that. None of that.
Right. So you're just changing the paradigm.
That's what my candidacy was about in 2014. If I had listened to the political establishment, I would have never been a candidate. Everyone said, it's not your turn, it's not your time, sit down, shut up. I believed in running a fearless campaign based on the things I cared about. Everyone cautioned me, you can't be for legalizing marijuana. You can't be for death with dignity. You're putting too many controversial positions out there. The advice I give anyone, if you feel motivated to serve your community in elected office, go out there and run and do it. And don't forget what it is that's motivating you to do it. Just be true to yourself. Speak your truth. Let your heart be your guide. That's your lasso of truth. That beating heart that's inside of you when you get into an uncomfortable situation and it starts beating 100 miles an hour. Every time that happens, Tom, that is your inner spiritual wisdom, your lasso of truth, that thing that flows inside of you saying you can step up with your courage and your power to do the right thing. That's your calling card. Always step forward and be who you are and be authentic. Voters understand the difference between you calculating something in order to try to win and you just being out there speaking your truth and trying to make a difference with it.
All right. I'm firing up the Netflix and I'm watching Wonder Woman.
Yes, you
are. First chance I get. All right. Good to see you. And we look forward to the next time.
Thanks so much.
Best of luck with this new endeavor. Appreciate it. Heather Mazier, she's the founder of Ms. Maryland Soul Force Politics. And we've got a link to her podcasts and the website at wypr.org/midday. We're going to take a quick break. Then J. Wynn Russick joins me here in the studio with her review of The Lion King. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.